Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. Time to begin this morning's panel discussion on topics in the news, and we'd love you to join the conversation, you know, virtually. And that's via the email, roundtable@wamc.org, if you want to weigh in. Roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our web page or Facebook page, or you can tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. All that is on the table for you. We are joined today by WAMC's Alan Shartok and Associate Editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good morning.
Oh, well, you're all right. Mike Spain gets points for being chipper, and Alan, not so much.
It's a beautiful day out there.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
All right, let's get right to it. From today's Times Union, Rick Carlin, great piece, flu shot or mask for healthcare workers. Big deal to some extent. Mike, explain.
Well, you might recall 4 years ago when there was a fear of a pretty bad flu coming through.
Yeah.
The state health department put out a mandate that all healthcare workers, public, private, who are going to be administering flu shots and doing other healthcare work, get a flu shot. Sure. And many objected. And they said it violated their rights. You can't force me to get a flu shot. I'm not going to get one. In fact, the Public Employees Federation, which represents a lot of state employees who are nurses, protested. And they even went to court and got an injunction. And pretty much fizzled out when there was a nationwide shortage of flu vaccine and there wasn't any flu shots to be
right.
given.
Now, right. Was this an issue of, at the time, back in 2009, was this an issue of concern about the safety of flu vaccines, or was this just, hey, you can't tell me what to do?
Well, I think there are some people who believe that there is a risk associated with getting a flu shot, although the experts say that that's not the case. Certainly the state health department would argue that your risk is much greater by not getting a flu shot, especially if you're in one of the high-risk groups like elderly or if you have a chronic disease or if you're a small child. But some people just did protest it as a civil right. You can't force me to do it. Others do have that fear, as you mentioned. But now there's a compromise. As the state gets ready, you know, flu season, you know, generally begins in October and runs through May. So as they're gearing up for flu vaccines to be given out, the state is saying if you don't get a flu shot, you have to wear a mask. And, you know, a mask might cost a quarter or even less.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a way to protect the person who you're giving the shot to so that they don't get the flu from you. An interesting take on it. A lot of people who were opposed to it last time said this is a reasonable compromise. It lets people make their own decision. Healthcare workers make their own decision. And the New York State Nurses Association says maybe if nurses had the right to stay home when they're ill, they could recover from any illnesses, and that really is the issue.
Well, that would make sense, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, Alan, you want to weigh in?
Paid sick time. To the dump, to the dump, to the dump.
No.
I'm confused.
Heil Silver? No.
Yes.
Yes, Heil Silver.
And what else was said? Who was that mask man?
Who was that
oh,
mask
I see.
Man? Okay.
Do you have anything substantive to
no.
bring to this? Okay. All right, fair enough.
But it is a you know, so it, as the flu season rolls out in October, you will not risk catching the flu while you're getting your flu shot now.
Okay, and I'm still confused as to why there would be any backlash at all to this.
Well, I mean, there was. I mean, there was a storm of controversy 4 years ago.
Well, you know that all injections, we see this by people who don't want to give their kids the standard injections.
Inoculations.
Talk about
but to go to school, you have to have your kids, and you know,
that's right.
They have to have their shots to get to go to school.
Right, and there are some people on religious grounds or on...
I guess a false science belief that if your children get their inoculations as infants, that it might cause them to have autism. Though that's been disproven, and
here comes the mail. Roundtable at WA. You know,
will be mail on that
yeah,
for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. I mean, there are people who believe that, and
yes,
and yet anybody in the sciences and in the medical professions warn that the risk of catching other diseases by not getting inoculations are far greater. And then you expose other children if you get these diseases, you know, because you have no inoculations, you expose
other
children.
That's where the Civil War comes from.
But apparently...
That, right, it is an intense kind of...
You know, it's a very bad message if if the unions representing nurses or medical professionals say, hey, listen, we don't have to take these shots. And maybe there are reasons, union labor reasons to do that. However, to the man on the street, he'll say, well, listen, if they don't want to take their shots, their flu shots, why should I take, why should my kids take the flu
shots? Perhaps somebody in the healthcare profession should be setting an example and getting a flu shot themselves. And, you know, you think of the photos that happen every October where Dr. Shah, the state health commissioner, is giving a shot to the governor and the governor is wincing, you know, a little bit, smirking at the camera. And it's all a publicity to show that everybody gets a flu shot in the right risk categories.
Yeah.
And, you know, perhaps it is an act of example, but it is an individual right that has been protected by this compromise, so we're not going to see the storm of controversy, it appears, according to the article by Rick Carlin today.
Frankly, I think the nurses have it dead on. The Nurses Association, hey, just take a day off or two if you have the flu.
Well, simple. I mean, that raises the issue that some in the private sector don't get paid.
Alan's scowling. My supervisor's scowling at me for that, by the way.
Right.
So we'll all be wearing masks here at WAMC soon
when you hear a muffled roundtable in the future.
In the news today.
No, it is. It's a big problem around here at WAMC because, you know, as you know, if anybody was watching this at WAMC.org and just say, you know, view now, whatever.
Sure.
You could see it's a very small room. Mm-hmm. And we have people who notoriously come to work, you know, filled with
dread,
snot.
Oh, snot!
And, you know, and expose everybody else to it.
Yeah, any. I think any employer would be wise to advise their employees when they're ill not to come to work and spread it to others, and to get the rest they need and return to work well.
But it is interesting, however, that the pharmacies are all competing with each other to give these
supermarkets.
Flu shots.
Yeah.
And
do you get your shot?
I do. Every year. And I also get, you know, a pneumonia shot.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a smart thing. Yeah.
Because, you know, the older you get, the more at risk.
I mean,
you are.
just mitigate the risk by getting these shots. And you can get them at supermarkets. You can get them at the pharmacies, as you say. And doctor's offices will do it. And usually your insurance will cover it.
Now, I see that the Vox Pop lines have been lighting up during this conversation. And I just would recommend that this is not the time for that.
No, we don't do that.
If you want to join in the conversation, you can email us at roundtable@wamc.org. Or you can go to our webpage and comment there on the Vox Pop page, or not the Vox Pop page, the Roundtable page. Now I'm really confusing it. Or you go to our Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. Vox Pop, not so much right now. This is the Roundtable. We'll be back and we'll talk about doggies and kitties and things like that.
Oh boy.
After a brief break.
Support for WAMC comes from Cultural Pittsfield and Islam Contemporary, exploring contemporary Islamic culture and life through a group art show featuring 25 artists from around the world and special events through August 31st. Discover pittsfield.com/Islam Contemporary. Handmade & More New Paltz, offering a mix of American handcrafted and internationally made crafts and jewelry, plus toys, paper goods, and women's clothing and accessories on Facebook. And Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts. A family-owned business for over 50 years, BoydenandParron.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, 21 minutes after 9 o'clock, joined by Mike Spain of the Times Union and WAMC's Alan Chartok. Another interesting one that has been in the news.
But wait.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes?
You're not sorry.
Okay.
I just want to say that Mike Spain just said something that I didn't know. We were talking about us old guys and how we watch the Me Channel.
Yeah, the Me TV.
I may have misspoken.
The Me TV.
Yeah.
I might have been Leonard Brezhnev.
I said I liked the Rifleman.
Yeah.
And he said Khrushchev liked that.
Really?
You know, it might have been Brezhnev.
I
have this image of a Russian leader coming to the U.S., going to California
in the
60s
Khrushchev,
and giving Chuck Connors of the Rifleman a great big hug because he was such a big fan. It might have been Brezhnev.
Probably Khrushchev. Right. He went out there, you know. Yeah.
They all like the American Westerns.
Well, once again, we have sort of blurred the line between the off-air conversations and the program, which is...
What's wrong
with that? Ray, you were talking talking about an important story in the news about animal ownership.
Before the show got away from me? Good point. So this has been in the news, and it's been in the Times Union, WNYT reporting this morning that Green Island put off a vote that could have limited how many pets people were allowed to have in Green Island. TU's been covering it. Mike, why don't you give us a little background on this?
Yeah, Ellen McNulty, the mayor of the village of Green Island.
Well, of course, McNulty is the mayor.
Yes. Right.
This particular McNulty Ryan, Ellen McNulty Ryan.
She's a lovely lady.
You know, talked about complaints from area residents about people not picking up after their dogs. Police, you know, have sometimes found dogs in homes and barking and have to go out kind of, you know, mediate the situation. And so they brought up the idea of limiting the number of dogs and cats that you can have in one household. If you lived in a house that you owned or a single family house, you could have a few more. But if you lived in an apartment, you'd be even more limited. And the idea was just to manage a potential situation. If you already had a bunch of dogs or cats, you would be grandfathered in. They weren't going to go and take your pets away.
Granddog.
Right.
Okay.
So we have a blogger on TimesUnion.com, Brad Shear. He's the executive director of the Mohawk and Hudson River Humane Society, so he's quite qualified to speak on this matter. And he says that one of the issues that you get into when you try to limit the number of household pets is that one size doesn't fit all. In other words, it really depends on the situation.
Yeah.
They have a lot of people at the Humane Society that take in foster animals, and they'll house and feed and take care of animals until someone is able to adopt them. And those people would exceed this limit in this situation. Some people are just capable of handling more than others, and it depends on the animal itself. You know, some dogs are docile, some are friendly. Even a couple little dogs might tear at each other. So, I mean, there's no one answer that applies. He's just a little concerned about trying to limit that. And I guess so was the town, of, you know, the Village of Green Island's board last night when they did table it. You know, you just can't, you can have guidelines, but you really have to.
I mean, Alan, you have a dog. You have one dog.
Fact, that dog just emailed me.
Oh, I'd love to hear what Murray had to say.
He said, as you know, that the Literacy Network of South Berkshire educated my dog.
Yes,
he can now read and write, and writes my columns quite frequently.
Sure, I buy the premise.
Buy the gag.
Evidently.
Ouch! Was that a shot, Spain?
It was easy.
All right, okay, let's just move on.
It's good, good. He's taking Rex's place. So, so the dog wrote me, and I got to really speak for that. But I always talk to my politics students and say, every law, every bad law, is because one guy really screwed up. So inevitably, if you hear the stewardess come on American Airlines, the flight attendant, and say that we don't have stewardess anymore, and say
flight attendant,
come on and say, please be careful when you open up, you know, the thing above you, because the luggage may have shifted and hit you in the head. That's because somebody did that, and because they got sued for $1 million, and that became a new rule. And I guarantee you there was probably some incredible thing that happened over there in Green Island with a smelly house or something like that.
Yeah, our story doesn't reference that, but you know that story. That, I mean, it's a frequent story, not necessarily in Green Island, where police go to a house and somebody has cats, like 53
10
cats.
10 dogs, and there's kids, and there's feces everywhere.
And there's health problems.
But, Sarah Hinman Ryan, a very nice piece the day or two ago in the Times Union, took a quote from Detective Michelle Crowley of the Colony Police Department, who says, and I think this encapsulates what a lot of people feel, I get the spirit behind enacting laws to limit pets, but why not use the laws already on the books, like misdemeanor animal cruelty? And I think this resonates with people who don't even have pets.
Right.
And this, I get
just
a feeling,
use the laws that exist to enforce the laws rather than impose restrictions on very qualified and proper pet owners, you know, who take proper care of their, not proper pet owners, but take proper care of their pets, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Brad Shear made the same point. There are different situations. Alan, in your estate, you could easily house 7 or 8 animals. Murray's alone at this point.
We had two dogs. before Murray, and we had you go outside, we had an invisible fence, they could run around and they could scare off the attackers and do all of those things. Easily handle two dogs. I want to say a word for the dogs and the cats.
Okay.
I just did. That's the word. I want to say a word for them.
It's a topic that hits home with a lot of people.
It does. Dog pets, that's the end of the world.
It's almost, an issue not nearly as limiting as the Chinese baby rule, and you can only have one or two babies, but it's starting to get to that point where we are limiting what you can do in your own home.
I understand.
I once lived in an apartment building.
Well, that's different, though.
Lived downstate.
If you're in a gated community.
It was the only apartment building in town that allowed dogs, so everybody had a dog.
Yeah.
It was...
I know somebody who lives in a co-op in New York. As co-ops are...
Again, different.
You had the dogs. Now, you're not going to believe this.
Okay.
But the dogs had to be interviewed.
Mm.
They had to come to the co-op board
had to
and they had to interview
observe.
The board as to whether it was suitable, whether they could pick the dog up.
What's so over your head? Roof? Who was the home run champ?
Roof?
Well, the question everybody wants to know is, would Murray have passed that interview at a discriminating co-op in Manhattan?
I just don't know.
I mean, you could certainly see the point in a private community, a gated community, a condo, an apartment building, a town...
Hmm.
Where you might have 4 acres, you might be in an apartment. It's a little
there's
dicier.
More to this. There's more to this story. I think Alan is right on it. There was an incident that this is a response to, but we'll have to do reporting.
The other issue, of course, is I hate to bring it up.
Oh boy,
dog poop. Mm-hmm. Manhattan is pretty good.
Yeah,
We walk around there a lot with Murray every once in a while when down there, and people are very trained to pick up poop. Whereas there are other places that are not nearly as good about it, and that's really a serious situation. You want to talk about health?
Yeah.
And speaking of health,
we're almost out of time. Okay, go ahead. We've talked
from
about
Marilyn Rossier, who said using a mask usually makes things worse. As soon as the mask gets wet, it carries bugs straight through. That's Marilyn and Lee.
All right, and if you have more emails, we'd love to hear them. We'll read them at the other side of the news. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And back we will be with the Roundtable after we break for news. Welcome back to the Roundtable on the Roundtable on the Roundtable. I'm Ray Graff, in for Joe Donahue, joined by Alan Shartok and Associate Editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain. It is 9:38, and we continue our conversation. You can always join in by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org, or you can comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. And, this came over yesterday. We got an email to the station, and it may strike some, if you're just driving through or maybe aren't a public radio listener in general, as inside baseball. But those who work here and those who are members of WAMC and regular listeners to public radio, this is actually a big deal. Now, this is from the New York Times, but we got the email yesterday afternoon, early in the afternoon. And this is directly from Brian Stelter's piece in the New York Times. NPR, which has suffered a succession of leadership changes over the better part of a decade, needs a new chief executive again. Gary E. Nell, the public radio organization's chief for the last 20 months, announced on Monday, which would be yesterday, that he would be leaving to run the National Geographic Society. It came as an unwelcome surprise to NPR staff members, given that Mr. Nell brought some desperately needed stability to the executive ranks when he was hired in late 2011. And we'll start with Alan. Alan, I don't know about you. Sure caught a lot of us in the newsroom off guard.
Well, it did. Look, there's a background here. Most people think that WAMC and all the other member stations are basically either owned by or run by National Public Radio. They are not. What happened was, in order to get first-rate news and public affairs, the member stations years ago got together, pooled their money, and said, let's have a news gathering group par excellence, and they established National Public Radio. That's really how it happened. There may be a few details that are elusive here, but basically we all put our money into it. And on several occasions, we've really had to put them on very strict allowances, because if they could, they would spend unlimited unlimited amounts of money, wouldn't you? I mean, you know, the New York Times has people in virtually every capital in the world. NPR wants somebody in every one of those places. And so they've done a pretty good job, although you will get people who will tell you they don't do a good enough job and that they play politics too often. But I don't want to get into that right now. So you have the member stations. Years ago, the member stations had a representational organization that would represent them in their negotiations with NPR. You know what happened? NPR said, we'll do it both for you. We'll take care of us and we'll take care of you. Well, that's always a very dangerous sort of situation. Now what happens is that they go out and they spend enormous amounts of money. Now, WAMC pays them, I think $800,000, $900,000 a year now. That's a lot of money out of our budget. And yesterday, when Nell resigned, along with it came some obiter dicta, as they say in the Supreme Court, some extra language which said, and we are $6 million in debt, and we're trying to figure out some ways to cut down, to restructure. Well, when I heard that, I knew what it meant. It meant we're going to hit you guys up for more. And I think, not that I'm unwilling, you know, to support NPR when it deserves it and when it needs it. It's just that you can't reward bad behavior. Because if you do, you get into an endless downward spiral in which, as soon as they spend more and more and more and more, they come around and they ask you for more and more and more and more. And then you have all of our reporters in the field and everything. And by the way, they're working for very little money. And so when you compare the salaries at NPR with the salaries that we're paying, they really have to learn to live within their budget. Now, Gary Noel, and by the way,
Nell.
Yeah. One of the things that makes this so difficult is that he's had to sort of sit on top of this when NPR made all kinds of mistakes with Juan Williams and everything else.
Okay, now let's go back to that because he's only been here for a year and a half or so.
Yeah.
And let's go back to the backstory of how he got here.
Well, that was back in March of 2011 when you had the two different Schillers.
Right.
You had Vivian Schiller. She was the CEO who came on in 2009. And then you had this other fella named Schiller who was a big fundraiser. And he got recorded. He got taped secretively by somebody who had political objections to him. And he was saying things that were regarded as liberal. Yeah, and shouldn't be, you should be, you might have personal opinions in whatever you do, but you need to be objective when you're in the public eye. And then how that was handled was controversial. And Vivian Schiller also got a lot of heat because, a few months earlier they had
decided to let Juan Williams go.
They fired him.
Fired him, right.
Right, for giving his opinion on Fox. Although there were many other, you will remember, people who worked for NPR, our own Cokie Roberts, who we love so much, but who was on, ABC sure. and giving her opinion. So they didn't fire her, or they only fired him for giving
Mara
his opinion.
Mara Lyson at that time was also on Fox. She may still be. I don't know.
Right. So you know, it was really a mess. He came in. He came from Sesame Street, where he did a good job. And he quieted things down, but he's out. And he took a job for much more money, apparently, at National Geographic, which is, of course, a wonderful
right, a very stable institution. Yeah. The guy he's succeeding had been there since the 70s, I think. Yeah.
But this puts everybody back into the soup. I wrote to all my colleagues about, hey, look, let's take a look at all of this. And this is, we have to be very careful here. So this is a tough time for NPR because the last thing they needed was to lose
a
guy like
that.
But
don't they have great endowments? I mean, the Kroc endowment? I thought that was going to put them in the black forever.
We all had that momentary feeling.
There are a lot of people who call us, by the way, and say, what do you need our money for? You have all the Kroc money, not one penny of it. Not one penny of it. It went to NPR. They got so much stuff about that what they did was it began to say, well, this money has to be used for this very specific reason.
There are strings attached.
Well, I don't know that there were.
Oh, were they?
But
they imposed their own.
I'm really not sure. But it may have become post hoc propter hoc, which is what Cuomo used to say. In terms of the rationale for why the money wasn't what everybody thought it was.
Yeah. And so we shall see. Now, I assume you'll put your name in the hat in the ring for running the show at NPR?
Under no circumstances whatsoever. There was one conversation with
Matt. If elected, I will not.
There was one conversation with Mario Cuomo when he was governor and said, you know, to me offline, I guess it's enough time now. If I go to Washington, what do you want? Yeah. do you want to be, you know, head of NPR? And he said, under no circumstances, never, ever, 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 because it's a terribly difficult job. Mm-hmm. And I love this job.
Okay. Is this job any easier
than the NPR job? Hmm. Yeah, I think it's easier in that you're running a station, a series of stations, and that it's very rewarding, whereas, you know, you're down there, you have all of these personalities, you have these people. What was the name? Bob?
Edwards.
Edwards.
Oh, the great
Bob Edwards debacle and affair. What happens is these guys start to think that they're bigger than they are. They want major league salaries, and you got to handle all that stuff.
So other than possibly upping the rates, is there a fallout to member stations for a period of instability like this?
You bet there is, because NPR needs to be stable, but they also, and they need somebody with a firm hand at the top. And otherwise, everybody starts to fight with each other, and the results are not good.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and technology is changing the whole way that people consume their news. So.
May I just add one thing? I know Ray is very anxious to get on with this, but I did want to say that with the technology that you're mentioning, there is a question in my mind as to whether NPR thinks it needs the member stations anymore at all.
I mean, where would the local public affairs and news come from, Alan?
Exactly.
September 23rd.
Exactly. And so NPR has begun to set up experimental news gathering agencies around the country. I mean, if you want your weather right now and you go to the NPR thing, you just put in your zip code, it's going to give you the weather. Oh. If you want local news and you're beginning to set up these helpful groups that are going to help the stations, the real question is, when you go from Albany to California, you could listen to NPR out of Washington if they so desired, if they made it that way, without ever listening to a member station. Similarly, you could listen to WAMC from Albany to California. So then the question becomes, who needs the member stations if it all can come out of Washington?
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, who will pick up the gap if there aren't local stations?
I just told you.
Yeah, that's right.
I hope you were listening.
No, I mean, I don't think that blogs or news link sites will help you while you're in your car. I mean, if you're driving from here to California.
You can listen to online.
Oh, right. But I'm saying if there's nobody gathering and editing the local news and delivering it for the locale.
But isn't this a general problem that we all face now?
Mm-hmm.
As newspapers go further and further into the tank, they can't supply what they used to supply.
Right. It's economics. I mean, it's difficult. It's challenging. And you need local news media committed to covering local news, or the community will suffer.
Without question, you are right.
It's a brave new world, and it's time for a break. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. You can email us at roundtable@wamc.org. Mike Spain of the Times Union is here. Alan Chartok from WAMC is here. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. More of this scintillating chit-chat coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from the Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies, Millbrook, New York, presenting ecologist and evolutionary biologist David Haskell and his new book, The Forest Unseen, A Year's Watch in Nature, September 6, 7 p.m., caryinstitute.org. Paradise Copies, Northampton, Massachusetts, providing printing design for customers for over 20 years, from digital to offset, color copies, scans, logos, and more, paradisecopies.com. And College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com.
It's the the Roundtable on WAMC. 10 minutes before 10 o'clock, Ray Graff with Alan Chartok and Mike Spain. Yesterday, we heard that the defense team for Private First Class Bradley Manning is calling for leniency. And the grounds on which it is calling for leniency, somewhat interesting. Which of you gentlemen would like to apprise us of the details?
Mike?
Well, a prosecutor in the case urged for a 60-year sentence, for Manning, because he had leaked thousands of documents that were made public by WikiLeaks.
Hundreds of thousands.
Hundreds of thousands. Yes, that's correct. I stand corrected. But his own attorney is saying that he's demonstrated that he is contrite. He said he didn't want to hurt anybody. He realizes the difficulties that he's caused. When someone stands and asks for mercy, that's different than somebody doing, remaining defiant. And they say that he could return and become a productive member of society, that you really don't gain anything by locking him up and throwing away the keys. And
unless you're saying, well, we're going to set an example so that someone else doesn't leak 800,000, 700,000 documents.
You bet that's what's going on. Now, the real question for all of us is, are we better off or not having information so that we can have a democracy?
That's a tough one because, while people are complaining about, how this was, an act of espionage and some he didn't get convicted of it, but said it was treasonous to reveal all this and have it made public. A lot of interesting revelations came out in WikiLeaks that have made people stop and pause.
And how do you know who to vote for if you don't have information?
Right.
I mean, that's the basis of democracy. But I have a prediction to make.
Go.
They're going to throw the book at this.
Well, now, interestingly, the prosecution could have said, we want to go for the max 90 years. They pulled back and said, we want 60 years,
which
still don't understand why they did that.
Because they want a little, they know that there's an, they're polling.
So
they know there's a certain,
they
know that. And the big issue is, will he be eligible for parole when he's 80? That's what people, now you're the judge, you're sitting there. Judges are political too. And what's she going to do? Is she going to say, well, do I ever want to be on the Supreme Court in my own mind, or what do I?
Well, it's a military judge, right?
Yeah. So, I'm just telling you, hope springs eternal in everybody's mind. Mm. The eyes of the military justice system are on her.
Yeah.
I'm saying if it's 40 years or 50 years, it's still a long time.
But 10 or 15 years or 20 years from now, I mean, that's a long time, and some different attitudes may have some president giving him clemency. I mean, you never know what's going to happen because time changes the way we look at things.
You're right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the prosecutor said, he betrayed the U.S. and he was convicted of serious crimes, put some people in jeopardy or some of our assets in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the deterrence is what this is all about. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think deterrence is going to be on the mind of the judge and certainly.
But deterrence, it may be deterrence, Ray, but the question is it right?
Well.
Well, what? Well, I mean, I just gave the ultimate
right
thing. Look, we all talk about whistleblowers. We all talk about democracy. We all talk about information. The papers go out and they fight as like crazy as do broadcast organizations to make sure that if somebody blows the whistle, let's say he took one of the things that he let go on WikiLeaks, one really good hot one. Mm-hmm. Would we be all having this discussion right now? We'd be saying, no, whistleblower, very important.
As long as it didn't expose the name of a undercover agent in a foreign country, a hostile foreign country. I mean, those are the things that probably will prevail
yes,
here.
Yes, sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay, fair enough. We'll see what happens. The sentencing could be any time now. It may take a while, but we will certainly be following that on a national level and right here at WAMC. If you want to join the conversation, roundtable at WAMC.org, or you could tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. Mike, what else is in your fine newspaper this morning?
Well, the big story is, an important development in Malta, in southern Saratoga County, where the Malta Town Board last night kind of cleared the way for a second chip manufacturing facility to be owned by GlobalFoundries. It's going to be a $14.7 billion facility. Thousands of new jobs, and it also will help the neighboring town of Stillwater purchase Browns Beach, the old beach at Saratoga Lake, and open a public park there. So, you know, you're beginning to see some of the benefits of these kinds of manufacturing facilities.
Yeah. But do they get, what kind of, we had to really throw out the welcome mat to get the first
one. To get the first one, right.
Is that true here, too?
No, not as much. They're going to call this one Fab 82, and the current one, which is operating and manufacturing chips for IBM and other companies now, did get, I think it was like $1.5 billion in actual grants and all kinds of tax breaks and long-term.
Did we steal them from Austin? We stole somebody from Austin.
Well, that was Semitech over at the University at Albany, and now the Nanosciences School that is in the process of breaking off, having a divorce, you know, from a split, an amicable split.
Well, not necessarily amicable.
No,
that's
not
a topic.
Yeah. I'm opposed to that.
Yeah, anyway.
You and Karen Hitchcock.
But up the road in southern Saratoga County, this could create another 3,700 permanent jobs.
Okay, that's a great question. I want to stop you there for a moment. In looking at this over the last few years, do you have any idea, any sense of how many jobs that have not been imported, and how many local jobs have been created from all this?
Yeah, I don't have that State Labor Department data, but I will say that we had a story last week by Eric Anderson, our business editor, that looked at data and said that while the state's median income of a resident of New York State has been going down, the median income of a local resident's been going up. That doesn't say more people are being employed. But while state jobs and public jobs have diminished, we still have had growing employment here. So it does, perhaps some of those are people who've come out of the public workforce, and it has brought in a lot of international engineers and experts, because Global Foundries has factories, chip factories in Germany and elsewhere around the globe. So they'll hire and recruit from all over the globe. There's efforts to help international families, integrate into the community in Saratoga County. So I'd say it's a mix. You know, there's some new jobs that local people are getting, and there's lots of new people moving.
But there are no initiatives specifically saying, look, you have to create some local jobs and not bring them from Germany.
I'm unaware of any constriction like that. But, you know, when they first made the case for the first chip fab in Saratoga County, Fab 8-1, as they call it, they said, you know, where you're going to see the benefit is not just the number of people employed there, but you're going to have to hire, you know, people at local pediatricians, dentists, you know, stores to sell to kids because families will move in, you know, schools will have to expand, teachers will be hired. So so there is this sort of trickle-down effect.
And perhaps we're seeing the beginning of it in the housing market. We saw some
this is like number three
numbers
in the nation as far as getting back on track. The housing sales we reported yesterday for the Capital Region are in the tops of communities around the country that are gaining back momentum in housing. So, you know, this could be a big part of that.
How long it will take? Another story. Alan, you want to get the last word in here?
Yeah, we had a note from James Douglas, who announced that we could have heard the story on NPR, as I did, of course.
Oh, the Nell stepping down?
On Nell stepping down, and I answered him just yes, but by an NPR voice.
Okay.
That's the difference.
Fair
between
enough.
The kind of discussion we had and the kind of discussion you heard. That.
All right, and speaking of discussions, this one is now at an end. You can continue the conversation online at roundtable@wamc.org. That's email, or you could comment on our webpage or our Facebook page. WAMC.org is the webpage/roundtable, or our Facebook page, WAMC Radio, or you could tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. You can do all of those things.
Yeah, I want to just point out that you're being attacked by a killer moth, which is coming around
the
your
moth
head.
Is back. Every now and then we have moths. And,
I was wearing a mask.
Next time. Thanks to Mike Spain of the Times Union, Alan Shartok of WAMC. Thanks to you for listening. Hour 2 of the Roundtable, straight ahead.